Hello, my name's Susanne, and you're listening to the 10th episode of Handmade, from the life of a knitting, singing, writing spinner. Welcome to my very first special English edition of the podcast. I had planned to do this ever since I started doing a podcast, and then I realized that most of my regular blog readers wouldn't be able to read the to understand the podcast, since I'm doing that in German. And I thought, oh, I'll just do every 10th episode in English. And while that was quite a nice idea, I hope that you are enjoying this, I found that I got really, really, really nervous thinking about doing this. Oh, everybody will be able to listen and to hear my horrible German accent. Well, I know it's not that horrible. Usually I remember to say that instead of that and things like that. But yeah, speaking English is a bit different than writing English. I can't really stop and look something up. Well, I could, but that's not how I do the podcast. Anyways, I still wanted to do this, and so today I sat down and say, okay, this is the day. Now let me just say a few words to those of my listeners who don't understand English, so they know what's going on. Hallo an alle, die jetzt noch zuhören und die Englisch nicht so gut verstehen. Das ist jetzt die englische Folge des Podcasts. Keine Angst, das ist eine, was ich die letzten 9 Folgen geredet habe, Folge. Ihr verpasst nichts. Wir hören uns wieder bei der nächsten Folge, die ganz normal wieder auf Deutsch erscheinen wird. Also keine Panik. Und ich weiß, dass auch einige, so wie ich, gerne Podcasts auf Deutsch und auf Englisch hören. Dann ist das also für diejenigen wohl hoffentlich weniger ein Problem. Also bis nächstes Mal. Ciao. Oder ihr könnt auch weiter zuhören. So, now I'm back. Yeah, every time I'm thinking about writing in English or talking English or any of that, I'm instantly going self-conscious. And, you know, I thought that I didn't have an accent until I realized that I don't know of any person who has English as a first language who doesn't have an accent when speaking German. Well, except for one woman that I met once who studied German in college, and her German was really impeccable, but slightly off, you know. Like when I'm speaking German, I do have an accent, like either Westphalian or Bavarian or something in between, but she didn't. And that's, well, not the worst thing that can happen. So I decided that one can have a cute German accent because, you know, usually Germans, those are the bad guys in the movies. French is sexy. German is bad Nazi guy about to kill you. But, well, we can change stereotypes, can't we? So this episode is supposed to be about everything that I talked about in the episodes before, which means this will probably be longer than usual, and my usual podcast episodes are not that short to begin with. I'm trying to be as concise as I possibly can, which probably isn't that concise, but at least I have a list. A list with everything I knitted and spun, for the past, month. I started podcasting at the end of August 2010, and so you get to hear about everything that I did in between. And then I'll try to say a few words to every topic that I've talked about on the podcast. I usually have one major topic that I try to stay to. Well, yeah, a bit of rambling goes on, but yeah, you know how it is. So, our first segment is always what I'm knitting and spinning. This time it's what I've been knitting and spinning for the past month. That's almost half a year, isn't it? Yeah. So, first thing, I've been talking about this in every single episode of the podcast, and I will be talking about this for more podcast episodes to come because it's still not finished. It's a turtleneck that I'm doing. It's called the ebony turtleneck. Ebony turtleneck. The pattern is Tang by Wendy Bernard from the book Custom Knits, and I'm knitting it from Wollmeise 100%, and that's the colorway Ebenholz, and Ebenholz is the German word for ebony. I started this more than a year ago in December 2009, and I thought, oh yeah, this will be a quick, nice knit. I was a bit disillusioned because it's a turtleneck for myself on 2mm needles. That will be taking a little while, but I thought, yeah, this is so mindless. I'll do this while watching TV. And then, I don't know, I started knitting it and it went great for some time. And then, I don't know, I didn't feel the love. And then I just kept looking at it and thinking, well, I'm not that fat. I think this might be a bit too big, but I don't know. And I did everything right. I did a gauge swatch. I washed the gauge swatch. And yeah. Needless to say, I'm still knitting on this, and I'll be telling you a bit more about this turtleneck when I'm talking about episode, let me see, 5, is it? Yeah, it's 5. That episode was called My gauge swatch lied. Yes, now you know. Second thing, that's still not finished. This is really, really weird, isn't it? I started all these things in the summer and they're still not finished. Yeah, the second thing is maple wings. First I wanted to knit the Alhambra stole by Utlinde. And I started knitting that, and I ordered the yarn specifically for that. I knitted on that for a while, and then I didn't really like it, and was quite hard to knit because the Alhambra stole has lace, where you knit lace on both sides of the pattern, so you don't have wrong sides where you get to purl the whole row or something. You always have to be attentive and look for yarn overs and things. And while the pattern is quite complicated and really, really beautiful, I found that knitting it became a bit boring because once you get the pattern, it doesn't really change all that much in the course of the stole. And for me, that's, oh yeah, I have to keep track of this complicated lace pattern and nothing ever changes. And so I decided to frog that, and I wanted to make something that was less straight lines than the Alhambra pattern. I wanted something to be that was more wavy. And so I saw the Maple Wings stole by Anne Hansen and I started doing that. I really, really love it, but you start on the bottom edge of the whole thing that has more than 600 stitches there. And while you do decrease in the course of the stole, of course, for ages it was like, okay, I'm knitting for 45 minutes and all I've done is one row, and that's not very motivating. I don't know, after Christmas, I started knitting on that again, and I made nice progress and thought, oh, this will be done soon. But I don't know, for whatever reason, it has been sitting in the knitting bag for a couple of weeks again. So eventually I will finish it. I like knitting it, but I don't know. It's one of those projects that keeps sitting and sitting and sitting. And yeah. Third point on my list, that was something that I knit on while we were on a vacation. That's a pair of socks for my husband. It's the pattern Devon by Cookie A from the Sock Innovation book, because last year for me was all about knitting patterns from that book. I found that I'm buying a lot of knitting books and I never ever knit anything from them. And so I thought, okay, I like these socks, so now I'm making cookie ace socks. I had my husband choose two patterns, or three, I don't remember, from that book. And so I made him Devon, and I made another one that's called Rick. I only finished those a week ago. And both of these pairs of socks were made from Wollmeise again. You must think that I'm like bathing in Wollmeise, but it's just that once a year I go to her shop. It's not that far from where I live. It's about an hour train ride. And so once a year I stock up on Wollmeise. I didn't buy that much. I bought the yarn for the turtleneck and, I don't know, two more skeins last year. So that's quite, yeah, sensible. Devon, yeah. And then I made lots of socks, as always. I made two pairs of socks for a friend of mine who is a spinner. And she, in exchange for me knitting her socks, she hand-dyed me some merino roving for me to make a sweater from, like 400 grams. And I'll talk a bit about that later. But for her, I did two pairs of socks. One from the Cookie A book, the pattern Angie. I had done that for myself before and I really enjoyed knitting those. And this time it was especially nice because that friend of me gave me hand-dyed sock yarn. She had dyed that with, how's it called? Cochinelle something? Yeah, it was orangey with an all-natural dyes. So I made those, and then I made the cockoesque socks by Yarnissima for her as well with regular store-bought yarn, like online sock yarn or something. Yeah, then I made a hat. I made two hats for my husband. First, Michael. I called it Michael. It's the Kohlhaas hat. My husband one of those people who have a rather receding hairline, so he likes to have a lot of hats and different weights around. So, and I got the idea that he really needed something made from cotton, and I got this nice cotton merino yarn a year before that, and I made him the Kohlhaas hat. I like it. The hat is really nice, but for some reason I didn't enjoy the knitting that much, but might also have something to do with the fact that it was teal yarn again. And I'm very peculiar about the colors that I like to knit with. And if it's too bluish, I don't really enjoy it. The interesting thing is that gray is fine. And, well, all colors of red and orange and purple, and oh, that's all great. I don't really like pastels or neutrals much, but yeah, if it's too blue, I have made my husband a scarf from very, very pretty Wollmeise yarn again. It's called a Thunderstorm. It's all blues and like almost black, dark gray and a bit of teal, and really nice yarn. But I found that when I knitted along, I was like, oh, blue, 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 blue. Oh, nice, teal, teal, teal. So, yeah, I almost didn't finish that because it was too blue. So, and then I made another thing. The second hat I made for my husband was Struan. Unfortunately, I had made one for him before, and he really, really loved it, but yeah, since it was superwash warm yarn, he thought, okay, I'll just throw it in the wash. So, you can wash this superwash yarn in the machine, but afterwards you have a child's hat. So my son got a very nice hat out of this, and my husband was there, and his favorite hat was too small for him. So I took pity and I made another one. Then came the time when I had to knit socks for a sock knitting class that I taught, where I showed the participants how to do different sock constructions, and we all knit little baby socks, like cuff down, toe up, different heels, different toes. So I hope they're quite familiar now with doing every kind of sock there is. I think the students really liked the class because they all signed up for a follow-up class that I'll be teaching coming March about advanced sock knitting with lace and cables and color work. And I want to do some Turkish socks then, because that's the one thing we didn't do in the class in fall. So let me see. Oh, and I did another thing for my husband. You know, I've knitted a lot of things for my husband last year, but I think that's because my own sock drawer is totally full. You can close it, but you have to push real hard. So I don't really need a lot of woolly things right now, apart from that turtleneck that I really, really, really need. But yeah, that's not finished. And my husband is a really nice person to knit for. He really appreciates all the work that goes into it. And he likes wearing the things. So yeah. And my son, on the other hand, doesn't wear wool ever. It's really weird because even as a baby, he had hand-knit woolen sweaters. Well, my mother made those for him. But in the past years, he has said, oh no, I can't wear that. It's itchy, itchy, itchy. And you can show him some like merino cotton where there's more cotton than merino, and he'll say, oh no, this itches. And so I don't make anything for him. I'm just about to buy some acrylic yarn to make something, because I know he wants a hat or something that I made for him, but I don't know. I don't really like knitting with acrylic, and I don't really like knitting with cotton. So yeah, I'll see. It's a bit weird. I have a son and he never ever wears anything that I've made. Yeah. So I made another thing for my husband. That's the lotus leaf mittens. Those took quite some time to finish because the lotus leaf mitten pattern, it's by Ellie Stubenrauch. And you can find it on Twist Collective. The pattern is for women's hands, so those would be too small for my husband, who has quite big hands. And so I thought I'd just take yarn that's a bit heavier. And my first attempt came out far too big. Of course, I only found that out after doing the cuff and, I don't know, about half an inch of the first mitten, and then I had him try them on. That was a case of, oh, I think those might be too big. Those might be too big for a couple of days, until I could get hold of him and say, oh, try these on. And he said, oh, they're fine, they're fine. And I looked at them and said, no, sorry, those are too big. So I had to wait and go to the city to buy some more yarn. Heavier than the pattern calls for, like sports weight yarn is what I used in the end. And then I started them again. I was not as enthusiastic about knitting them the second time, because, you know, you all start out and say, oh, this is a nice pattern, I like it, and I like the colors, and my husband will love them, and everything's all right. And then you knit like half a mitten and think, oh, nah, I have to start over again. So some of the, I don't know, drive that, startitis drive, wore off. But I did them a second time and everything was all right. I had half a mitten, like the first mitten was done up to the where the fingers start. Well, it doesn't have fingers, but I was past the thumb gusset and I looked at it and thought, this is really puckering. And because I was trying to do the standard knitting with, excuse me, I was trying to do the stranding with, how to describe that? Well, first I learned how to do stranded knitting with both hands about a year ago or so. And when I learned it from the Philosopher's Wool site, and they tell you to weave in the strands like every other stitch or so. And while this is really nice to knit, the fabric that you get is not very even. So if you weave in the strands not as often, you get a more even fabric. But yeah, I tried to do that and it didn't work because my strands were not loose enough. And so, yeah, the fabric puckered. And so I unraveled all of the color work that I had done and started over weaving in the strands every other stitch. The fabric might not be that even, but the mittens are really warm and they look great. Not as perfect as I would have liked, but well, after the doing the first mitten for the third time, I didn't really care anymore. Those mittens are done. I gave them to my husband for his birthday in January, and I only have to take a picture of it. And that's my great, great weakness. I have three boxes of knitted, finished things sitting here that I need to take pictures of. I'm really sorry because I'm telling you all about these things that I made and I can't show them, well, because I didn't take a picture. My excuse was that the weather's really gray, but to be frank, there were sunny days in December, one or two. So yeah, maybe that should be one of my resolutions for 2011. Take pictures of my finished objects in time. I don't know if I can do that, but I'll try. So let me see. I also test knitted another sock, but that I can't talk about, huh? Then I did two handspun things that I'll talk about later. I made another ish bell from Drachenwolle. That turned out really nice. I made socks from... I was in the Blue Moon Fiber Arts sock club last year, a bit by mistake because I miscalculated how expensive each... I thought I'd get 12 hanks of yarn, and, well, we only got 6. And if I had realized that beforehand, I might not have spent the money. But on the other hand, I'm really happy because I really, really love the yarn. It's gorgeous. I loved all the colors, which is really lucky, you know. Signing up for a sock club, you never know what you're getting. And for most of the shipments, I did one sock in one pattern and one in the other, because you always got one skein of sock yarn with two patterns. And the patterns were looking almost, they can look like they're meant to be a pair of socks. So for fun, I just knit one sock in one pattern and one in the other, apart from twice. There are two shipments where I'm knitting or have knitted both socks in the same pattern. So what I've done is there's the firecracker colorway from how it's called, socks that are dark, lightweight, I think. And I did one dusty corner sock and one my heart beats for you sock. Then I started a Christmas present for my son. I haven't finished that so far. My son has a really big love for stuffed animals. And so I started making him Sheldon the turtle. He really loved that. Sometimes he walks by when I'm sitting in front of the computer looking at things. And when he saw Sheldon, he was like, oh, that's cute. I want one of those. Yeah. And I started doing it. And then I remembered how much I don't like knitting small stuffed toys because it's so fiddly. And now I'm at the point where I should stuff the body and then finish it and then sew things on. And I don't like that. So I really hope to have that done in time for Easter. But for now, it's just sitting there. I also did Snapdragon Tam and flip tops, which, and another pair of socks. Another pair of socks for my husband in the colorway Vincent, Wollmeise again. Why am I saying Wollmeise? It's Wollmeise. Yeah, sorry. And that's the pattern Rick from the Cookie A sock book, the first one. So, I'm now thinking because I left out all the spinning stuff so that I could put it all together. And I know it has been 26 minutes already. So, hand spun things. I spindle spun sock yarn. So I'm on a quest to spin real fingering weight 3-ply. So far I haven't succeeded. And I spun some merino top on my featherweight Bosworth spindle. I think it's cherry. Yeah, it's cherry. It's very lightweight and I love the spindle. And I thought I'd take this project to my parents when we were visiting in May or June because I knew, 10 days and I'll better pack some needles because once I finished the sock yarn, I will want to knit them. Yeah, as if. So after month and month and month, I finished the sock yarn sometime in August or so. And I spun and plied it on a spindle. It was a real joy, but it took a bit longer than I had thought it would. And then I thought, well, such a special yarn needs a special pattern, and I really want to do more designing. So I started designing a nice sock pattern, and I started knitting with it, and I didn't like it. And then I couldn't remember how to do these faux cables with the twisted stitches. And so I did real cables instead, but it didn't look like I wanted it to look. And then I looked at the whole thing and found that no, I hadn't achieved real fingering weight yet again. And so I was knitting a sports weight yarn with a stitch count that was suitable for fingering weight. And so I frogged it. And thought, well, once I have time and there's space to design, I'll pick this up again. And then I didn't. And then just before Christmas, I found that I really needed mindless knitting projects. There were so many things I was supposed to do and to think of and to remember. And I didn't want my knitting to be complicated. So I pulled out that ball of spindle spun yarn, and I made just plain vanilla socks, and I really, really love them, and they went totally fast. I really enjoy knitting with hand spun. I have never knit with anybody else's hand spun, but knitting with my own hand spun is really a perfect joy to me. I don't quite get it because the yarn's not perfect by any means, and it's bumpy, and but yeah, it's really something. It's really joyful to knit with my own hand spun yarn, and often I don't want to do a big complicated patterned projects, but just knitting a plain old sock with that is it's enough. So that was really fun, and especially since I like the colors so much. It's orange and yellow, it's orange and red and like dark pink. What else? A hand spun. Oh yeah. I made a cardigan. I had a vision at the beginning of August. I was standing on a train, a platform, and thinking as I was going to a spinning meeting, and I thought, I want to do the vine yoke cardigan by Isolde Teek out of hand-spun yarn, out of naturally brown, chocolatey yarn. And that's what I did. And it took a lot of sampling. That was one of the projects where the yarn never really turned out like I wanted it to. And it, I don't know, I sampled 5 times or so. And in the end, I just settled on doing a very small size for, you know, I needed something like an XXL or something. And I made the S or M because my yarn was heavier than it should have been. But I really like the cardigan. It's I spent, I think, most of August and September spinning for that, or maybe even a bit longer, because I don't really spend much time spinning. But it went really fast, and the yarn's really nice. And I spun about a kilo of Corriedale for that, and made it 2-ply. In the beginning, I had thought I wanted a 3-ply, but yeah, nah, I only did a 2-ply. It was too heavy anyway. And then I made the cardigan, and I made it with short sleeves, though I had thought I would want long sleeves. That turned out to be a good decision. I'm wearing it a lot, and I like the fact that it only has short sleeves. I thought I wouldn't, because I'm always cold at my hands, but then I found that with the piano playing all day and guitar playing and doing dishes and knitting and spinning, I always push my sleeves up. And with the short-sleeved cardigan, so you don't have to push your sleeves up. And if my underarms are cold, I just put on a few arm sleeve warmers. How do you call those? Arm warmers? Like leg warmers for the arms? I have no idea how to call that in English. Yeah, but you know what I mean. So I did that, and that was a big, great, big pleasure. But now I have like half the yarn left over. And I'm thinking about doing something for my husband again. But I doubt that I will be able to make a sweater for him from 500 grams. So either I buy some more and spin more to make him a full sweater, or maybe I only do a vest. I haven't decided yet. So, and then I spun some orange merino and silk top for the Snapdragon Tam and Snapdragon flip tops. So you see, I'm really a fan of Isolde Teek. I'm doing her patterns all the time. It's sometimes it's a bit weird when I go somewhere wearing all kinds of different things, and then people ask me, "Oh, did you do that? Did you make that yourself?" And I say, "Oh yeah, yeah." And this is a pattern by Isolde Teek. This is my cardigan, and my hat is a pattern by Isolde Teek, and my and my, you know, my shawl, that's a pattern by, yeah, you know. Sometimes I make things designed by other people as well. But yeah, Snapdragon Tam and flip tops. That was really a pleasure to spin and to knit as well. The only thing is that in the beginning I wanted to make a set of three, like the Tam, the flip tops, and I wanted to make a shawl to go with that, because I have a new winter jacket that's brown, and I wanted orange accessories to go with that. Accessories. Yeah, that's the whole pronunciation thing. You can't see that when I'm writing, but I'm doing it wrong all the time. I made the Tam, that's finished. I made the flip tops, and I still have to weave the ends in. So I'm starting to acquire a new pile of UFOs again. And, you know, every day I say to myself, Susanne, sit down, weave in these ends already, but I haven't yet. And as for the shawl, in the beginning I thought I wanted a shawl, but now I think I might want a cowl instead, or I don't know, something like Tudora. I'm not really sure. And I bought quite a bit of that top. And now since I enjoyed making those handspun socks so much, I have decided to make some more spindle spun sock yarn. And I took about 100 grams of that merino and silk top and started to spin that on my Bosworth featherweight again. And I really like that, but nonetheless, the spindle is sitting on top of the fridge. I haven't touched it in weeks. But, well, eventually that will be socks, I'm sure. So let me see what else. Then I had a spindle project before that sock yarn that was, I thought, oh, I want to learn how to spin silk. And so I bought 100 grams of silk roving, very nice red shimmery stuff. I started spinning it, and at first I was really happy that I could spin it so fine, but I had a real problem with the silk getting all tangled, and I found that the thread is really, really thin, and it hurts my hands, and after some time I didn't really enjoy it anymore, and I thought, well, this is about pleasure, this is not about I don't know, telling myself I have to finish through whether I want to or not. So I just pulled the silk off the spindle. And so for now I'm doing the merino silk top instead. And I don't quite know what I will be doing with the red silk. It will get spun eventually, but not right now. And then after finishing the yarn for the snapdragon things, I started spinning that hand-dyed merino that my friend gave me, the one that I made the socks for. She really dyed it with me in mind, so I know that she wanted it to be really bright red and pink, and unfortunately, a lot of the color came out when she, you know, after the dyeing, she put it in water again. And afterwards, it was like, well, a bit paler than she wanted it. But I like it anyways. And I wasn't quite sure about the top. And merino is not my most favorite thing to spin, despite the fact that I'm spinning it so much, because it's the thing that I can, it's easiest to get. But there are other fibers that I like spinning better. But so I started spinning the merino, and for once I didn't want to sample or anything. I just thought, okay, I'll just spin this however it turns out, I don't care. And then when it's finished, I see what kind of project. I wanted this to be a sweater, but, well, if it turns out I don't have enough of it, well, I don't know. I didn't want to stress myself again, like trying to make a yarn for a specific project, like with the snapdragon temps and such. I had to try to produce something that fit the pattern. And so this time I didn't want to do that. I started spinning it. I was like, nah. It has a bit, it's matted a bit. But then I just sampled anyway. And I took another bobbin. I spun some more. I applied it. And now I have a small skein of it. And I'll I probably knit a gauge swatch from that, so just to see how it looks when it's knitted. Because I found that the skein that I made, that's already plied, I like that much better than the singles. So if I know it will all turn out well, then I'll probably go and spin on that some more. So Whew. That's been everything that I've been knitting and spinning since the end of August. So now, this would be the place where my main topic would start. And my main topic for this special episode is that I'll be talking a bit about every episode that I made and what I talked about as far as I can remember. Because while I did take notes, I'm not writing much down. So in fact, I found that for like 2 or 3 episodes, I didn't even have a piece of paper where I wrote down the title. I had to look it up in my blog. Yeah, but now I have here in front of me, there's a list with all the topics that I talked about. And so for the main topic. So I wanted to call this episode Best Of. And then I found, well, no, it isn't. It's more like an overview of what I've been doing here. For those of you who don't understand German, or for those of you who like to have the overview, anyways. So my very first episode back at the end of August was called Beginnings, and I talked a bit about why I'm doing this podcast, which is mostly, I really love listening to knitting podcasts, and I find there are very, very few German knitting podcasts. There used to be a few more, but right now it might be that mine is the only one out there, which is really sad. So there should be people doing this. There used to be one that's called Stimme aus dem Stash. That was very, very nice. And there used to be another one called Fadenfreude that I listened to as well. But yeah, if you understand English, as you probably do if you're listening to this, then there are a lot of nice knitting podcasts out there. My personal favorites are The Electric Sheep by Hoxton Handmade and Cast On by Brenda Dane, who seems to have taken a vacation again. But yeah, she has done a lot of podcast episodes so far. And Craftlit, something that I like, and Spin Doctor, very, very great podcast. Reviews for hand spinners. So yeah, that's what I started out telling people why I'm doing this, and then I told the story how I learned how to knit. It was during summer break in 1977 when I was turning 10, and I was there with my parents and my sister. And we were on a vacation camping in Cornwall in the UK. And we used to go on these very long camping trips, like 5 or 6 weeks. And that can get a little bit boring after time, especially if you spend most of your time sitting on the beach. And I really liked Cornwall because the years before we had been like to the Mediterranean, and when you go there in July and August, it's really, really hot, and I don't like the heat, never have. And Cornwall was a bit more temperate. I really loved it there. And we had people with a trailer next to us. They had like 5 or 6 children. I was very impressed. One, the youngest daughter was my age. That was very nice. They were German, so I could talk to her because I only started English in school in 5th grade after that vacation. And the mother of that family was there knitting a sweater for one of her daughters. And my mother saw that and thought, oh, that's nice, I can do that. And she went out to buy yarn and needles, I suppose, that she didn't bring any knitting needles with her on vacation because she hadn't knitted for decades, I think, before that. And she made this sweater for me. That's like a garter stitch, all rectangles, a boat neck sweater with broad stripes in white and red. I remember that well. And I sat there and probably said, oh, I want to learn that as well. I already knew how to crochet. Moment. I don't know, my microphone stand is sinking downwards, so I'm sitting here humped over the with the microphone. It's a bit uncomfortable. So and I wanted to learn how to knit. So my mother bought me some yellow acrylic yarn. I made a plan to make a sleeping bag for my Cindy doll that I had gotten for my birthday that year. And so I made two yellow rectangles in garter stitch. And that was how I learned to knit. And I remember that sometime later, I got a book from the library on knitting that was, I think it was especially for kids who wanted to learn. And I tried to teach myself the purl stitch out of the book. I don't know why, because my mother knows how to knit and she would have shown me gladly. But I think, already at that age, I wanted to be all independent and do everything on my own. So I started purling and knitting, and then I showed my mother something that I had made, and she looked at it and said, well, nice, but sorry, you're doing the purl stitch wrong. And so I had twisted all the purl stitches. I could have become a combination knitter, but my mother just said, no, this is not the way to do it this way. And I have learned a lot about knitting from books ever since then, because while my mother is not a bad knitter, she's a bit reluctant to learn new techniques. And I remember she had this big book on all sorts of handcrafts, like sewing and crochet, and there were all these stitch patterns in there, and I tried them all out and I was totally fascinated by, wow, how to make a sock or lace or anything. And I remember I started making up my own patterns quite soon. And after that, garter stitch squares that I, by the way, never sewed together, so no sleeping bag for my doll. After that, I don't know, I had to make a vest. I wanted to make something for myself, and my mother said, oh, okay, best thing is do a vest for yourself on 10 millimeter needles. I hated the project. I hated the needles. I hated the yarn. Pale blue. Yeah. And the thing that I made after that was like on 3 millimeter needles, a full-size cardigan for myself with, I don't know, 4 different colors and stripes and all patterns with knit and pearls and set in pockets and a button band and everything. And the next project after that was a stranded Norwegian cardigan. Yeah. So I've always been quite happy doing complicated projects. I only learned how to knit socks, I don't know, a couple of years later. I tried to learn out of a book, but I couldn't understand how it worked. And so I only made this one pair of socks, and I was all like, I don't understand this, I don't understand this. And then a couple of years later, a friend of mine showed me how to do a heel, and she explained the formula to me. So like, take this many stitches, do the heel on half of them, and yeah, how that works. And so, let me see. The beginnings. I was talking, I don't know, that first episode wasn't that long, but I talked about everything that I've talked about here and probably some more. My second episode was about, does knitting make you fat? You see, I myself have gained quite a bit of weight since 2007, and my husband was the one thinking that maybe it could have something to do with the fact that I was knitting all the time. And then when I went to knitters meetings, or like the first German Reveler meeting, that was like 2 years ago, in 2009, yeah. When I went to all these meetings, I looked around me and found yes, there are quite a few knitters and spinners who are overweight. Not all of them, you know. I'm still not quite sure. It doesn't work that way for everybody, because I keep seeing people who say that knitting helps them lose weight because they knit instead of eating. But for me, it doesn't work that way. First, I still eat while I knit, not exactly at the same time, but almost. Second, it's totally possible to drink beer while knitting or spinning. That's what long draw is for. And third, knitting and spinning are both things that you do while sitting down. And if you spend all your weekend from morning till midnight sitting on a bench knitting lace, that might slow down your metabolism a bit. And I find that when I'm not knitting, I'm more prone to get up from my butt and move, put away the dishes or go into another part of the house or something. In a way, knitting has made me fat, which doesn't mean that I'm about to give up knitting or spinning, but I'm trying to be a bit less obsessive about it. So I no longer spend whole days knitting lace glued to a chair. I usually try to get up after half an hour or so and do something else. And I hope that will help me with my weight problem. As a comment to that episode, somebody said, that was Frau Schlamuser, that knitters are people who are enjoying things so much and who love pleasure maybe that goes hand in hand. You're a sensual person, so you like eating and yarn and colors and I don't know. But that was my second episode. Does knitting make you fat? And I can say for me, the answer is yes. I hope it doesn't have to be that way. The third episode was about why stash always becomes more or bigger. That's one of the headlines that you can't really translate. It was called Warum die Wolle immer mehr wird, and that's like why the yarn always grows more, but that sounds stupid in English. So I decided to in English call it Why Does the Stash Always Grow, but I'm not really happy with that one either. But you know what I mean. You start out as a new fledgling knitter with one ball of yarn and a pair of needles. And 2 years later, you turn around and you find that every flat surface of your house sprouts wool. And I used to be a one project knitter. And these days I'm like a five project knitter. And I really have to be on my guard so that not every room in the house is full of yarn. And I was thinking about why that is. It seems that my stash is not that extraordinarily big. It still fits in a few boxes and half a drawer here and there. But it is always getting bigger. In the beginning, I didn't have a stash at all. And then I had like a plastic bag with some leftovers. And then in the mid-90s, I bought myself a knitting basket. And then I had a box in the attic where all the leftovers went. And then I went to buy Wollmeise yarn for the first time ever. And since she didn't have a shop back then, so it was, you knew there was only one chance a year to get that yarn. So I went out there and bought yarn for 100 euros all in one go. And I felt very self-conscious about that. So much yarn, so much money. But I knew I would eventually knit it all up. And I have since then. And I buy yarn and I knit with it. And still I have more and more and more. So first it is... Usually I buy for a certain project, but when I'm somewhere where I can get hand-dyed yarn that's hard for me to get, then sometimes I get a few more. Usually for me it's quite safe to get sock yarn that I don't have something specific in mind for, because I'm knitting so many socks. I usually don't buy sweater quantities of yarn in one go, but I have in the past sometimes, but only for one sweater, never more. And still, the yarn's always getting more and more. And now I found out what happens. It's the leftovers. I don't throw away leftovers. Sometimes I do if it's only a very, very small amount of yarn, but often I keep that as well, so that when you have a hole in something, you can mend it with leftover yarn. And then with all that hand-dyed, precious, wonderful yarn, I don't want to throw away 40 grams or 30 grams of that. Usually for myself, when I make socks, I only need between 70 and 85 grams of yarn. So I always have something left over, and I always think that I will be making something with that. And usually I do. I did knit something with yarn that I bought in 1995. So But the thing is, until I'm making something out of leftovers, I will have to store them somewhere. When I started spinning, I was a bit better already. I knew about the ways of the yarn, and I bought double the storage space that I thought I'd need for spinning. I can tell you it has filled up already. And since I'm right now in the process of sampling and acquiring beginner spindles, because I want to teach a spindle class in March, I don't quite know where to put all the fiber as well. But yeah, I hope that once the class starts, and maybe I'll find another storage solution for the spindles, I'll be good on that front as well. So far I'm quite okay with the spinning projects. I used to have one wheel project and one spindle project. Now I bought some more spindles. And I'm getting a bit lax about that, but yeah, spinning fibers okay. So and especially when I'm seeing pictures on Ravelry where people post their stash, they have fiber stash, like 50 fleeces in plastic bags. I will never, ever, ever get to that point. I swear. Never. But well, yeah. Yeah, no, I won't. So that was my big answer to the question why the stash is always getting bigger. It's because you have all these leftovers you don't want to part with. So that was, episode 3. Sorry. Yeah, get yourself a cup of tea. This will go on for some time. My fourth episode was Help UFOs. UFOs. Oh, you say UFOs, do you? In German, it's UFOs. Much easier to pronounce. Yeah, because I'm really, really, really bad with finishing things, and that applies to just about everything in my life. But it's just so tangible when you have all these unfinished sweaters sitting there in the pile. And so I found that I was getting quite restless, because there were all these projects that were just about finished, but not quite. And so I talked about that, and I have a great dislike of weaving in ends and sewing things up together and blocking things and taking pictures of them. And so I have all these piles. And that time when I did the podcast, I challenged myself to finish all the UFOs. And so I had a few weeks where I wove in all the ends. And it was like a miracle. I had three sweaters sitting there that were just about finished. And I only had to, I don't know, I even had bought the buttons for one of them, and I only needed to weave in ends and block them. It's ridiculous. I have since then acquired some of these puzzle mats for blocking, because I found that the fact that I don't really have any place to block things, and that I always have to ask my husband for the rug that he has in his studio, that's one of the things that makes finishing harder. And I also moved the wool wash from the basement upstairs. And then another thing, the bathroom sink broke, so I couldn't use that anymore for the washing. Yeah, but yeah, I've gotten a bit better. And then I made a pact with myself that I could never ever start anything new without really finishing the thing before. I already broke that, because the Snapdragon flip-tops are sitting on my dresser with unwoven ends. And they have a lot of ends to weave in. And I don't know why I dislike that so much. It's not that bad. I don't know. That's the only project, though. Everything else has been finished completely. Well, my husband is wearing his Cool Leaf mittens unblocked. That's not a problem, isn't it? Yeah, so the UFOs. Then came the big story of my gauge swatch lied. I started telling you about this ebony turtleneck sweater at the beginning of this episode. This thing has been haunting me. Really, I've been working on this for more than a year now. Except, of course, I haven't really been working on this for more than a year now, because if I had, it would be finished. I started this Wollmeise again, 2 millimeter needles, turtleneck sweater for myself. I find that in the winter, I really love a turtleneck to keep my neck warm. And I have two turtlenecks that I wear all the time, and I don't wear anything else. And that becomes a bit boring. So I decided to make myself one. And since I had the Custom Knits book by Wendy Bernard, and she really teaches you how to make your own pattern, so you can do these sweaters in every gauge you want. You can personalize them, do the waist shaping at the point where your waist is. And so I knit a swatch, I washed the swatch, I measured the swatch, I counted stitches, I measured myself, I did all the math, I started knitting, everything went well, and then I looked at it and thought, oh, this is really looking big. And it did. And then, as I said before, I asked my husband, say, don't you think this is a little big for me? I'm not that fat. And he looked at it and said, oh, it looks fine. And then I was depressed, because I thought, I'm not that fat. I know I'm fat, but not that fat. And you know, it took a really long time to knit. And I was like, I pulled out every motivational trick that I know, like putting a marker in when you start knitting that day. And then in the evening, you can see how far you've come. Yeah. And then, you know, I did the thing I should have done from the beginning. I tried the sweater on. Yeah. And it was way too big. I was right. You know, I had looked at this. I had almost finished the whole body of the sweater, 2 millimeter needles. And I'm wearing like a size, 46, 44, 44 maybe on the top. Yeah, that's like a size 14, American size 14. Yeah, takes a long time. And this one was even bigger than that. So I found that between doing the gauge swatch and knitting the thing for real, my gauge had changed so much that it was ridiculously big. Well, maybe I could have worn it, but I would never have been happy with it, because the reason for me to do a sweater at such a fine gauge was that I wanted something that I could wear under cardigans as well as on its own. And, you know, knitting this is a bit boring because it's dark brown stockinette in the round and round and round. And since I was being a good girl and I changed balls, every other row, so that because it's hand dyed yarn, and so you might get pooling, and you know the skeins are not really equal, so yeah, you're supposed to change, use two balls and switch between them, so you get very it would give, there would be stripes, only the color is close enough that you can't really see it, but it's more even. So I was doing that as well. It was driving me bonkers. I don't know why. I really love knitting something where I have one ball of yarn, needles, and that's it. Even if it's cables and lace and everything, I don't mind, but having more than one ball of yarn makes me itchy. I don't know. Still, that's why I always think that I like stranded color work. And then when I'm doing it, sometimes I don't really like it. But I do like the way it looks when it's finished. But the knitting process is more enjoyable to me when it's only one ball of yarn. But so I was knitting this sweater and I was just pulling through and telling myself, okay, I want to finish this before winter hits so I have something to wear because I have gained weight. And two of my two turtlenecks, one's too small. Yeah. So, yeah. I've been wearing, an aside, I've been wearing the same red, really, really red turtleneck for weeks now. I'm hanging it out to air, and sometimes I throw it in the wash, and then when it's dry again, I wear it again. Yeah, I really, really need that turtleneck. So, I had this turtleneck. The body was finished almost completely. There would have been maybe half an inch to go, but it was too long anyway because the gauge wasn't, it was not only the stitch gauge that was off, it was the row gauge was off as well. Yeah, so my what should have been my waist did not sit at my waist. I thought about making changes or wearing it as it was, but I knew I would never have been really happy with it, so I frogged the whole thing and started again. Before frogging, I measured the part that I had been knitting, and I took that as my new gauge swatch. It isn't, it hadn't been washed, so I expect the whole thing will grow a bit bigger with the wash, but not too much. I have, as I said, I have this gauge swatch that I made before, and I can see how much that grew through the washing. And so I'm hoping that that will be almost like that. So right now I'm knitting a sweater that's just a bit tight, and I hope that when after washing it will fit. But my motivation for doing this turtleneck hasn't been that high, even though I need it. I'm really a bit done with it because I already almost finished. Well, yeah, I would have had to knit the sleeves, but most of the sweater had been done. Yeah, but it doesn't help. If it doesn't fit and I don't like it, yeah. But that's the reason why this turtleneck is sitting in its nice knitting bag, waiting for me to work on it, because I'm just not really happy with it, and it's not interesting or exciting or anything. It's just something I know that I will wear a lot once it's finished, but not the most enjoyable knit. Which brings me to the topic of the sixth podcast, that was knitting pleasure. I was thinking about what makes knitting pleasurable, because I'm talking a lot on the podcast about things that I don't like about knitting and projects that go wrong and things that I have to frog and rip back and that don't turn out the way I wanted them to, and all these frustrations. And yeah, and then I leaned back and thought, well, wait a minute, I'm always talking about, oh, this isn't fun anymore, and I don't like this, and I don't like that, and yeah, I just have to finish this, even though I don't like to. And so why do I even bother with this? Really, who wants to do something that's always frustrating and never turns out quite the way they wanted to? And so in that episode, I concentrated on what makes knitting a pleasure. And it's like, when I sit down and I knit, it can be really relaxing. I like the feeling of the yarn and the colors, and I really like the excitement of starting something new and looking at a pattern and imagining how it will turn out. And sometimes even those boring, mindless, sucking at in the round things can be a real pleasure to do. Yeah, there's the rhythm of your hands. I've once taught a class on knitting meditation, and that's where you only concentrate on the moment, on this one stitch, pulling the yarn through, and how it feels. And that's very liberating, and that's very pleasurable. That's a horrible word to say. Pleasurable. Sorry. So that's completely different from being so project-driven, saying, I need a brown sweater now, and then just rushing through. There are knits sometimes that are pleasure from beginning to end, but they are very, very rare. As for me, it's usually I like starting and then I hit a bump, something goes wrong, and then I'm not that interested anymore, and then I have to figure things out or start over again, and then it's, yeah, sometimes I have to force myself to keep knitting on something, and then after a time, after having forced myself to go on with it, then sometimes it's really nice again, and then it isn't, and then it's nice and enjoyable, and then there's the finishing. And I know there are people who say that they don't like finishing because then they have to part with the project. That is not my problem at all, I can tell you. I can't wait to see them finished, because then I get to start something new, and that's to me always exciting and great. And I have become a bit more sensible, because I feel really overwhelmed when I'm starting too many projects. I feel like I can never finish anything, and that it's just all too much. So I try to keep it at a certain level, and that often means that I plan to do something and for months before I actually get to start it. Like with this never-ending turtleneck, that takes me more than a year. So every other sweater that I've planned had to take a backseat to that. I did make an exception, though, because that handspun Vanyo cardigan was something that I just pushed between. I'm not really allowed to, but I did it anyway because those are my rules and I can change them if I want to. So, but I don't really like having two big sweater projects going at a time, because I know from experience then that none of them will really get done. Yeah, but yeah, so that was the thing that I was thinking about in that knitting pleasure episode, like what's a pleasure in knitting, what do I enjoy, what don't I, and you know, there's a reason why I didn't call it knitting fun, because fun is something that's more fleeting and external, but joy and pleasure can only can come through things that are maybe hard at times, that they're not fun all the time, but they are a pleasure nonetheless. Like my standing example for something like that is hiking in the mountains. While you're doing it, it's really hard. You're sweaty and your legs hurt and you're walking for hours up hills and you're out of breath and thirsty and hot and you don't know how long you will have to go on like that. And every time I do that, I think that, well, why am I doing this? This is no fun. I should have stayed down in the valley and read a book. And then you go on and go on and on. You're hungry and thirsty and hot and, well, as I said, yeah, very unpleasant. And then you come up to the top and you sit there with your lunch and bottle of beer. We always carry a bottle of beer up the mountains, yeah. Very Bavarian. And then you sit there, look, and you see the view and you see the valley down below, and it's just the most beautiful thing in the world. And it's just so much more beautiful because you went to all the trouble getting there. It's, you know, when I was in my 20s, I would never have understood this at all. I would thought, I can look at a picture of that. But you know that it's not the same. And that's the same with a sweater. That is why we make them ourselves, even though it's frustrating and it's a lot of work and it isn't really cheaper than buying them. And, you know, it never really turns out the way you want it. But still, it's in a way, it's much more enjoyable than buying something. And you know how it is. If it really turns out to be as nice as you thought it would be, that's the very, very best thing in the world, because you can look at this and you can wear it and you can say, oh, I made this from scratch. That's really, that's a great pleasure. The next topic on the podcast was knitting for Christmas. I usually think that I'm not knitting for Christmas at all, and then I end up giving a lot of knitted presents sometimes anyways. I'm not a big fan of stressing out yourself through knitting, like trying to make a pair of socks or a hat for everybody you know. That's just crazy, and don't do it. But I found that for the times when I actually gave away a lot of knitted presents, I usually knit them throughout the year, not really thinking about making Christmas presents. But I finished a stole and I didn't like it for myself. And I thought, oh, this would be perfect for my mother. And so I gave it to her at Christmas. You just have to pack it away and make a small note to yourself that that's the Christmas present for your mother and remember where you put it. And then you're good. But, you know, knitting 24/7 for 3 weeks before Christmas, which is a time where most of us have a lot of things to do anyway, I find that It was always very busy, but ever since we've had a child, it's been busier and busier. And now we get to attend Christmas parties right and left, and to see every single relative we have just before Christmas. And, you know, if one knits at that time, it's best to just knit for pleasure and for yourself, and or maybe do it like I do with my husband. I never knit anything in secret for him. I usually just I show him the yarn, I show him the pattern, I say, okay, this is what I'm doing for you, do you like it? And then I can knit on it even when he's sitting next to me. And if I don't finish it in time for Christmas, my husband's birthday is in January, so that's, very, very nice. So if I don't finish it for Christmas, I can give it to him in January. But usually I'm not that uptight about these deadlines. So if I make something for somebody and miss the birthday, I just tell them, you know, I wanted to make you this shawl and it isn't finished yet. This is how it looks, and just wait a bit more, please, and I'll give it to you later. Or I just finish it and give it to the person right then. For example, I was making a pair of fingerless gloves for my sister. She asked for them. You know, on my blog, I always do these links to Reverie, and it used to be that Reverie had the front page where there were these mermaid mittens, and she saw them, and she's not a Reverie member, so she only saw the mittens and said, I like those. Could you make me some, maybe in blue or green? And I had just by mistake received a shipment of blue Wensleydale. And I really, really don't like blue, but that was a nice blue. I didn't want blue at that time. I wanted brown. But I kept the top and made, I think that might have been really fingering weight yarn. Okay, quest finished. I achieved fingering weight, yeah. And I made this three-ply fingering weight, or almost fingering weight, and I made these mermaid mittens for her. They turned out to be quite a bit too long and too big. She has bigger hands than me, but not that big. But they do fit, and I know she likes them. But I just sent them to her anyway. I thought about keeping them here until her birthday or Christmas. And then I thought, well, nah, I just give it. Yeah, she can have them now. And then for her birthday, she gets like a paperback and that's all. So don't be so stressed out about presents. It's really not worth it. And a present can't really be equivalent to the love that you feel for a person. So don't try. Just give something that you think that might be the right thing for that person, but don't stress out over it. And I find that if I don't have anything special to give, then sometimes not giving anything is okay as well. Like with my husband, he sometimes gives me really, really great presents, but he can't do that every time. So he always got completely stressed out before Christmas because he had to find something for me. And he was thinking like, okay, I love this person so much, so the present has to be really, really, really special. And I managed to find quite some special things for him over time, because I keep looking for presents all the time. I make a list in my little notebook. Well, okay, actually in my iPod, but it used to be a list in my notebook. Like when I saw something that would be a good idea for somebody, I'd just jot it down and say, okay, present for my father, my sister, my mother, like everybody. I saw this and this would be great for, because you always forget. And then when it's Christmas or birthday time, you can just pull out your list and there's something on it. My husband doesn't do that, and I'm notoriously hard to give presents to. And so there was a conundrum and, like I said, total stress. And then I started becoming a bit lax about his presents. And so for his 50th birthday, I only gave him like a note saying, I will give you a new desk chair. And he didn't get it in the end. But so these days, he doesn't have to be so stressed out about presents, because if he doesn't know something, then sometimes he just asks me what I want. And that's really great, because then I can have spinning equipment or such, which he can't really choose on its own. Like, for a person who is not spinning, looking at another person's wheel and spindle collection, so how would you know what the other person wants? Or the other way around, he wanted some guitar effects, yeah, for Christmas. You know, I barely know the effects that he has. How would I know what would be a good thing to give? So, yeah, it's much nicer that way. No stress. And presents shouldn't be stress. Yeah, that was my knitting for Christmas episode. And only two more to go. The eighth episode had as a topic, The Bus Ate My Stitch Markers. That was a suggestion by Tini from the... how is it called? World of... I'll put a link in the show notes. She's a really nice person, and she has been writing me mails and suggesting new topics, and I'm really thankful for that. Grateful, sorry. I love that. I don't know if I get around to do all of them, but it's really helpful. So she used to ride the bus to work every day, and she kept losing stitch markers. And on one occasion, she lost a whole sock. So I didn't know it when I recorded the episode, but she explained that since it's a bus and not a train, it's you know, like it's not rolling smoothly along, but there are bumps, and it, you know, you get like thrown around on the bus. So the likelihood of losing your stitch markers is much bigger. But in that episode, I gave a lot of tips of how not to lose things, and a little rant about people who are supposedly grown-ups but always lose their mittens or keys. I think that even if it's hard for you to keep track of your things, you should get yourself to make you need a system. For example, I'm most of the time I'm a quite confused person, so it would be very easy for me to always lose things, and I used to do so until I was about 8, and then I decided to do something about it, and since then I've always put my key into my bag and always into the same pocket of my bag, and then I close it so it can't fall out. And I do that with everything. Like mittens always come right coat pocket, and then the zipper has to be closed. My hat goes into my left coat pocket, and my key, and so I always know where everything is, because nothing drives me more crazy than to have to search for things or lose things. And likewise with things like stitch markers and cable needles and things like or DPNs. And as I said, first rule is never, ever, ever, ever put those things down on like a sofa. Always, if you have to put it down, put it somewhere where it can't roll off, get, you know, accidentally bumped anywhere or so. And this is why I love to have knitting bags that have a closure that you can really pull close so that things can't fall out. All my stitch markers and tape measures are cared for. I have a little box for my stitch markers, and tape measures get put back to their place. And you know, and I know I sound very smug with, oh, I never lose anything. But really, I don't, not anymore. But that's because I take care to put things in special places, like, yeah, you know, a place for everything and everything in its place. I'm not a tidy person by all means. It's just that I don't lose paperwork or keys or notions. Those are things that I really keep track of. Yeah, and then my last episode, hooray, we're at 1 hour and 30. I hope that there are people among you who listen to podcasts the way I do. I usually go running while listening to podcasts, and so I like it when podcasts are longer than like an hour or so. And or sometimes I listen to them while I'm doing errands. I'm walking all the time here. I'm not taking the car or anything. So I start to listen to a podcast. Then I go to a shop. Then I stop the podcast. I buy groceries. And then I schlep them back all the way listening to the podcast. So sometimes I listen to podcasts in increments. And yeah, and sometimes I do like an hour and some little more than an hour of running. And you can go through quite a chunk of podcast in that. So last thing was my first episode for this year. And it was about, good intentions or resolutions, whichever. That's the thing that in German, it was about gute Vorsätze. And that can mean both good intentions and what you'd call resolutions. So it was a bit about Juris resolutions, a very fit topic for a January edition. I don't think that I have any knitting related or spinning related resolutions this year. I don't plan to do more knitting or spinning. Maybe even a bit less. The one thing that I have decided to focus on this year is losing weight, which has nothing to do with the topic of this podcast in any way. And then I gave a few examples of things that people usually set up as goals, like knitting from their stash, or go on a yarn diet, not buying yarn for the year, or knit more, or learn a certain technique like lace knitting or cabling or stranded knitting or sticking. And that has been something that I had planned to learn last year. I wanted to do both an Ouroboros sweater that's designed by Devin New that I really, really love. And I think I might want to do that out of my leftover hand-dyed sock yarn one day. And the other thing that I've never done that I've thought about maybe trying last year, but I didn't, was do a stranded colorwork project with sticks. I don't think I'm afraid of sticking any longer because, I don't know when, last year or no, the year before that, I made this moss green cardigan and I can't remember. It's Vivian. Yeah, that's the name of the pattern. Another Isolde pattern, Vivian. And, with that cardigan, it has a zipper. I didn't do any sticks, but I sewed the zipper in with my sewing machine. I almost got a heart attack because I was so afraid of doing that. And like I had these visions of all that knitted fabric being pulled into the machine and mangled, but it didn't. It worked fine. And so now I'm no longer that afraid about sewing hand-knitted fabric with my machine. And I'd say that's the first step of sticking. And I also have done there's a Cat Bordy book the personal footprints sock that has that you knit that in the round, and then you have to cut the stitches and make an opening. And so, well, you could say that's sticking, couldn't you? The method is surely a bit unusual, but that, yeah, okay, maybe that counts as sticking. So I've learned how to stick last year. Yeah, not quite, but almost. Yeah, so those are things that people do. They try to, I don't know. I don't think anybody sets out to say, I want to double my stash and I want to have a huge UFO pile by the end of the year. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah. Quite easy to achieve. It's like there are not a lot of people who decide to gain weight, but some have to. And I've heard for some it's really hard, not for me. So that was my first episode of 2011 about resolutions and the new year. And now I no longer know what to talk about. Well, I could, but I think it's time to let go for this. So I hope you enjoyed the very first special edition of Handmade in English. Next 9 episodes will be in German as usual, and then I hope to do another one in English. Except if everybody who listens to this says, I don't want this, make it go away, I can't stand to listen to you in English, then maybe I'll think about it. But other than that, I wish you happy knitting, and I hope I see you on my blog. That's I'm sure you know it, but I'll tell you again. It's creativemother.de, and you can reach me my email address is creativemother@web.de, and my Twitter handle is freejazzmama, because Creative Mother was already taken, and my Reverie name is Creative Mother as well. So I wish you happy knitting, and I hope I'll see you again. Ciao. Da da do da 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 da